I'm David Marcus, host of Drinks with the Deal, and today our guest is Aaron Sue, an M&A and private equity partner at Morgan Lewis and the managing partner of the firm's Philadelphia office. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So we're going to talk about your background on today's podcast, how you came into the law, how you came to M&A, your move from a firm in New York to a different firm in Philadelphia when you were a senior associate, and then your new role as the managing partner of the Philadelphia office at Morgan Lewis. So with that, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to the law.
Sure. So I'm a Midwest guy originally. I was born in Illinois. I was raised in Iowa all the way through high school. And I went to the University of Michigan for college and studied business and history and wasn't sure that I wanted to go to law school, but I was thinking about it. And there was an opportunity to try a career in consulting. And so I first worked for a boutique in Connecticut for a year. Then I worked 2 years at Deloitte Consulting, first out of their Detroit office and then out of their Chicago office. And while I was at Deloitte, I was doing a lot of M&A post-closing integration work. And while I found the M&A environment really interesting, a lot of variety in particular, I really wanted to move further up the chain in a transaction. I wanted to help determine if we are going to do a transaction, if we're going to do one, how would it be structured? What are going to be the various considerations that would determine how that's structured? And then actually sign the deal, close the deal, and then try on a new one. And so for me, I was looking around the law school environment. I saw Northwestern right there in my backyard when I was in Chicago. They had a good reputation for feeding students into law firms, into corporate practices. And I applied there way back in 2007. And while I was there, I had an opportunity to apply into the JD MBA program, and I finished with a JD MBA at Northwestern.
So talk a little bit about the JD MBA and your decision to use those two degrees to practice law, because oftentimes many JD MBAs really in their heart of hearts think they want to go to the business side.
Yeah, I always came at it with a primary interest in practicing at first. If you went back and looked at my essay, it would say I was going to practice for a few years and then go be an investor or go be a banker or something along those lines. And for me, it was just always fascinating to stay on the legal end. Once I had a chance to do some of the transactions I did in my early associate years, it was just very clear to me that I really enjoyed being a deal lawyer, not just being around deals in particular, but really to be the legal advisor on the deals that I had a chance to work on.
And what deals were formative for you?
Yeah.
Even a summer associate or a young lawyer?
Yeah. The deal that was, I think, truly formative for me was my summer associateship at Cravath that summer 2009. And I'll be dating myself a little bit here to even say the initials AOL feels like an ancient time ago, but AOL was still an existing business. It was owned by Time Warner still. It was, you know, one of those truly blockbuster transactions when the merger happened many years before 2009. And I got a chance to work on the spinoff of AOL from Time Warner. And I was a summer associate. And so the team was very gracious in giving me opportunities to be in the room when we would draft the Form 10. We pushed send to the SEC and announced to the world that Time Warner was going to spin off this business. It was big news just based on how big that transaction was to start. And it was really from there that I sensed I really wanted to be a deal lawyer. I wanted to have an opportunity to break news like this, work on transactions that were changing the industry. And I was a securities transaction. I got a chance to do a lot of M&A deals early on in my years at Cravath. And those were really memorable and great opportunities to learn, but also that this was a career that was going to be for me.
Was there a pivotal M&A transaction or transactions for you?
Yes. The one that really sticks out in my mind is IBM sale of its point of sale system to Toshiba. I was a second year associate doing kind of typical second year associate things. And there came a point in the transaction which happened a lot in the old days and is starting to happen again, where everybody said, we're going to sign this deal. We need to be in the same room. And that meant a room in Tokyo. And so six of my team members and I, we flew out to Tokyo. We packed for 3 days. We thought we could sign in 3 days potentially. And it ended up being 17 days in Tokyo. It's hard to describe how much learning happens in an environment where two massive client teams and two massive legal teams are coexisting almost 18, 20, 22 hours a day. It's a crash course in how to get a deal done. And while it was certainly excruciating at times, there was at the end of it, this moment of achievement that just kept me coming back. It was a big team win. I think that's a hallmark of an M&A practice is everybody feels like they've won by the end of it. And it was something that I felt I want to keep moving up the chain of responsibility and opportunity.
And I'm assuming you talked about what you learn in a crucible like that. And I'm assuming that a lot of what you learn are soft skills, how to interact with the people on your own team, how your more senior people are negotiating with their counterparts, interacting with the business side. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. One of the things that I really remember were senior associates on that deal, partners on that deal, that whether we necessarily wanted to or not, we had to be constantly available in person to our clients that were very much trying to negotiate this deal for themselves. And one of the things that I noticed when I was a junior associate is the senior lawyers on the transaction seemed to have an answer for any aspect of a question that came up. And I remember just looking at the senior lawyers and observing this and thinking, how is that happening, right? How is it that these questions, which I didn't know the answer to as a junior necessarily, how is it that after 3, 4, 5 short years, you can become that sort of fount of answers for your client and guidance? And what I realized there and over time was it's really about guidance. And it's really about being this welcome source of guidance for your clients, where you invite them to ask you question after question. And even if it's challenging or it's not sticking in a way, the role of you as an M&A deal advisor is to make it work with your client, make sure that they fully understand the aspects of the deal that they're negotiating so that you all know exactly what the risk allocation is going to be as you sign. And it was that guidance, that role of constant trusted advisor that I got to witness in my very junior years, that for me was, again, a crash course, but really an amazing experience.
You grew up in a family that was really suffused with business. Your dad built businesses. Talk about that experience, what you learned from it, and how it's affected the role you've chosen to take in deal making and how you interact with the principals you advise.
Yeah, my dad is a huge influence on me to this day. We're very close. He was one of these serial entrepreneurs that started and ran many businesses, but he started as a restaurant manager for an American-style diner in Iowa. And when he realized that he didn't want to continue to be a restaurant manager, he started businesses that had a nexus with Korea and the United States. And a lot of them were home goods, cookware, that sort of thing. And so I was an entrepreneur's son from the beginning, and I watched all of the cycles of what is involved there and what it means to be a business owner. And as a kid, we had what I now know was a bet the company litigation that my dad was involved in for his own company. And I saw the lawyers in that environment argue ferociously for the merits of my father's case and really for our family business, but really for our family. And I got to see how lawyers can be critical to the overall success of a business. And so I didn't just see the world as just business and legal. I got to see how those came together in a way where you could use the law to achieve critical business outcomes. My father won the case. The lawyers were heroes. There was no appeal. It was a complete win. And it really secured the future for our family as well. And, you know, to this day, I try to bring business principles into my practice. I try to, whatever concept, however legal or technical in nature it may be, I try to make that real from a business context for my clients. I think it helps that I was a consultant before. I think it helps that I had an MBA from Kellogg. I think it helps that my father was an entrepreneur. I understand what is a bottom line perspective for our clients. And I try to frame my guidance around what is the actual business risk for taking one position versus another? What's the market position? What would be a normal way to allocate this risk? Let's talk about what the client's needs are for their particular business in order to achieve their goals in this particular transaction or beyond.
But talk about how growing up with an entrepreneur as a father affected how you think about the business of law from the time you started practicing and how that continues to resonate as you're managing a large office of lawyers.
Yeah. One of the things that my dad always told me as a kid was you always have a customer. There's always some aspect of a boss, no matter what you're doing. Even if you're a business owner, you have customers and you have people that you need to make sure continue to be happy with the service or product that you're providing. I very much think about that in my own practice. Are my firm clients, right? Are they engaged in a way where they are content, where they feel like they have a high degree of value that they are receiving as they hire me, as they hire the firm, as they hire our teams? And are we providing service in a way that will keep those clients happy and coming back? And that doesn't always mean, as we all know, telling the clients exactly what they want to hear. It's about framing the problem so they can be educated about how to be successful and match their goals against the environment or the counterparty that they're working with. And a lot of our family's core principles around business, being honest, trying to have the highest degree of integrity in everything that you do, that's something that I strive for every day. And it's really been a joy for me to be able to connect with my dad, who never went to law school, is never a lawyer. But we can talk about the overall client service life and world that he lived in as a business owner, that I live in as a partner in a law firm, as a business owner in a different way. But there's a lot of shared overlap, and it's really fun to discuss how small wins can become big wins.
Returning your time at Cravath, in your fifth or sixth year at Cravath, you moved cities and you moved firms, which, you know, can be challenging at that point in your career. Talk about that decision and how you managed that transition.
Yeah. So we were in New York, my wife and I. She started at Cravath as well. She was in-house at Lazard in their legal group, and we were trying to figure out, we had our one child, we were doing the Brooklyn parenting thing, and we were trying to figure out, well, what's the right environment, career and family, for our family, which we hoped would be a growing family. And my wife's from Philadelphia, I'm from Iowa, as I mentioned, and I knew that the deal environment in Iowa was going to be much, much smaller, of a vastly different scale. And we were thinking about being close to family. And so I said, well, why don't I just talk to some firms down in Philadelphia and get a sense whether this could be a good career home? We already know it'd be a good family home, right? We'd been visiting for years. I knew that the setup would be good from a family perspective, but from a career perspective, it was an open question. It's not uncommon to have a New York deal lawyer mindset about the rest of the world. And 5-6 years in New York, I had somewhat adopted that, but I wanted to expand my horizons and have that discussion. So I did decide to go to Deckert, which is just down the street here. I had a wonderful few years while I was there. I got a chance to expand my practice and take on a bunch of private equity deals, which Cravath had not been doing at the time. And in a city like Philadelphia, it's really useful to be able to be more things to more people, not just the strategic M&A lawyer, but you can also be the private equity lawyer. And I've also been able to develop a investments practice where I help clients invest from a minority perspective into transactions and into companies that allow them a foothold or an opportunity to develop a stronger relationship with a counterparty, which in many ways is a really enriching practice because there's an ongoing dialogue. It's not just transaction, sign, and close. you know, on the acquisition side and then come back for the sale. There's an ongoing vibrant dialogue that you get to be a part of as a lawyer, which has been a really fulfilling aspect of the broadening of my practice as we move down here.
Do you think that diversity of practice gives you a more interesting professional life?
I very much think so. I very much view my move to Philadelphia as a career accelerator for me. I get to see all the tensions and the push and pulls from a variety of perspectives, not just the heavyweight Fortune 100, Fortune 50 company coming in saying, here's our form, sign it as is. You know, you want this deal. We can't really negotiate. That's a tactic you see in the bulge bracket side of the market. But in smaller deals that are tens of millions or mid-market deals, those are deals where personality and new aspects, non-market practices can come into the fold and become a mandate. And for me, negotiating within new contexts like that really help test what it is that you're negotiating for, why you're negotiating for it, and allows you to advocate in ways that you don't always necessarily get to advocate for in the multi-billion dollar cash merger. So for me, I feel like it has really strengthened my practice. And what I really enjoy is bringing in my team members, my associates, and my partners into these transactions where we get to test a market standard, where we get to try to do something new and really help shape the market in completely different ways.
Talk about your move to Morgan Lewis in 2019.
Yeah. So in 2019, I was thinking about my practice more broadly. I had done a number of private equity transactions while I was at Deckard, and their M&A practice was very much dedicated to private equity, but I really missed my strategic deals. And I had an opportunity to talk to some folks at Morgan Lewis. My wife is and was at the time a Morgan Lewis client. And she had said, the guys over at Morgan Lewis, they ask about you. They'd be happy to go to lunch with you if you're interested. And by 2019, I thought, you know, I think that could be interesting. And Morgan Lewis folks came with an idea to bring me over as a junior partner in their private equity M&A practice. And as I got to meet the team and they got to know me, we both felt like it was a really good fit for the long term. And I would say every aspect from cultural fit, professional practice fit, this has been one of the best career homes I could have ever imagined. It's really hard to put into words for me how quickly this became home, which is a word I use a lot as I talk to our team members in my role as office managing partner. And it's a place that really values collaboration in a way that I've never really seen in a professional context. And I really cherish this place.
Talk about your role as managing partner, what that entails, and you know, the challenge of balancing having an active practice and managing a large office.
Sure. I would say I didn't know all the aspects of what it meant to be office managing partner when I said yes. Jamie, our chair, called me over the summer and asked if I would be interested in serving in this capacity. I jumped at the opportunity. It was a chance to learn more about how the firm works from kind of a more internal perspective. But it's always been known for all of our leadership posts that it is not an opportunity to turn in your practice and then take on just leadership responsibilities. It's really a both and type of situation. So what does it mean to be office managing partner of a Philadelphia office for us? Our firm's longest, deepest roots are in Philadelphia. That means we have generations old community partnerships and relationships with organizations like the Philadelphia Orchestra and Kimmel Center, Inc., which I do a lot of work with, like the Greater Philadelphia Chamber of Commerce. There's just a number of institutions in Philadelphia that we are very deeply involved with. And a big part of my role is to nurture those relationships, to be in receipt of requests from community organizations and clients all around the region who want to use our beautiful new space here at 2222 Market, which is a new office we moved into about 10 months ago. Or they're looking to bring on a team for a major pro bono opportunity. And I often get involved with those, especially if there's a transactional end to it or a corporate governance end to it, to make sure that we're bringing the right team because we treat all of our pro bono assignments just like we would any normal client assignment. We want to make sure we bring the right team for those opportunities. There's a whole litany of internal requests that you get as an office managing partner. I often describe it as any day you walk in, you get asked a number of questions you never thought you would have been asked as a lawyer. But a lot of these responsibilities are not legal in nature. And it's been fun for me and really a development opportunity for me to gather these administrative decision points and work streams as a managing partner to help further the growth and culture of the office, which we really cherish here.
You talked about how close you and your father are. Is there a story or a couple of stories that he told you about his own experience in business that really resonated with you, either when you were growing up or as an adult?
Yeah. I think for me, when I was growing up, my dad was building his business from scratch. He was a restaurant manager. He had some friends, literally from high school, that were putting together some factory relationships in Korea. So what did that mean for him? Well, that meant a tremendous amount of travel. And one of the things that my dad would always tell me is, you're never going to be able to achieve what you want if you don't go do it yourself. So he was going there himself and putting together the supplier relationships, the product opportunities, and then coming back to the Midwest, coming back to Iowa, but then flying all over the country to develop customer relationships with his customers, which were major department stores and other major retailers. And he had this tremendous capacity for in-person engagement, which for me is one of the biggest takeaways from how I try to approach my practice.
Did you ever see him, you know, as a kid, did you ever go with him to visit a client or just see him interact?
Well, on a very regular basis, he would take us to Korea every couple of years. We would meet his business partners. We would get a chance to have these dinners with his business partners where we got to see how he was establishing his profile and his reputation in a cross-cultural way. He is Korean, but he was bringing an American opportunity to Korea. And so what I took away from those in-person exchanges was there's a real role in being a bridge across cultures, across business opportunities, across sectors, specialties. And that's what he has always been his entire career. He's fluent in Korean and English. He has these relationships that have nurtured him for decades across many, many different businesses. And another big takeaway for me in all of that was the deeper you can create a personal relationship in a business context, the more valuable it can be to both of you. And so he created this mutual opportunity for his business partners from business to business to business that had this life to them that was much more about the business. And I would argue was even much more than about making money. It was really about having this special thing together with your business partners that you could bring to life and go along for the ride. So that was very fun. The other story that I'll share is in the litigation that we talked about. It was in federal court in Iowa. It was a very challenged commercial context. And my father never wanted to go into litigation with the other side. And there was a substantial monetary award that the court ordered to be paid to my father's business. And he went to the other side and he said, I don't want the payment. And the other side was just shocked. And they couldn't believe that he was declining the sizable monetary award. So much so that the global CEO of the company, which was based in Korea, flew to the United States just to have the meeting with my father to better understand this and say, maybe we would want to work together again. And he said, that's okay. We've been through a multi-year litigation. But that's the type of story that for me was about staying true to your purpose from the beginning. If you got dragged into a lawsuit, And even if you happen to win the lawsuit and win a monetary award, the court ordered award wasn't the goal. His goal was to settle this amongst them. And he, I think, really stood out in that opportunity to a lot of commercial actors in its industry when he declined the court ordered sum. So for me, that was an opportunity where I just saw my own father and I said, there is something to sticking to your word. There's something to having the highest business principles when you engage with people, even people that are suing you, that can help further your own business purposes. But really, there's an integration of life principles there.
And then finally, talk a little bit about your passion for golf, which is one of the ways you connect with your dad.
Yeah, my dad and I have been playing golf together since I was probably 8 or 9. It's the primary way that we connected when I was a kid, my brother too. And we'd always have a game we would play. And still today, we have these great opportunities to get together, whether it's back in the Midwest or out on the East Coast, or we play golf in Korea, we play golf all over, to get together, pick up where we left off. He lives in Chicago now, so it's a little further away. But for me, it's the best way to unwind. Some people find golf to be the opposite of that, but no matter what my score is at the end of the day, it's the best way for me to be in nature, walk, get to enjoy the company of my dad or my playing partners, whatever I'm up for that day. And I love the game in a way that I'm really looking forward to sharing with my kids.
Aaron, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, David. I really enjoyed it.
For Drinks with a Deal, I'm David Marcus.